We've had a few messages. Two weeks ago, we had Ian talking about on a journey. And I remember the map that he had up there with a little marker on it and saying, you know, sometimes we're coming from different experiences and different backgrounds. We're heading to Jesus, but we're sometimes at a different place than somebody else. So sometimes we might think you should be crossing that stream, but they're in a different place. Or they might be saying, I'm a bit lost. How do I get here? And we give them where we're at, but it's not helpful to where they're at. So, and I think really, you know, we can be at different places, and where I am is not always where you're at. And so the idea is, fix your eyes on Jesus and ask Jesus for directions. Go direct. We can help, but sometimes our help isn't always, you know, helpful. But we can look to Jesus. He knows where we are. He's been in the same experiences as us. So look to him. And then last week, God can and wants to work through you. You know, we had the story of the two characters, Joshua and Gideon, didn't we? And one was perhaps confident, experienced. He was that kind of person. That would be Joshua. And perhaps the other one was a bit more timid, inexperienced, lacking in confidence. And really, if you get those two characters, it covers all of us, doesn't it? So God can work through or use all of us, because if he can work with Joshua and work with Gideon. And in fact, I would like to say this. God is glorified, or shall I say, God is shown by using the inadequate ones, because that's what we'd call ourselves. I'm inadequate. I can't do anything. See? But actually, when we class ourselves as that and do something for God, God is revealed through that. And God likes to use the inadequate ones. But he uses all of us. And we've heard from various people to read the Bible. Just get in and read. We've had read all of it. It's quite a task, you know, those committed ones. And, you know, if you want an app, that'll help you. See Kevin. Don't see me. Oh, what's an app? No. If you want something to help you, there's all sorts of things that can help you get through it. Then my little challenge was read Luke, John, Acts, Romans. And then we had someone say, read Romans. And then Ian said, what was it? Colossians. So there's lots of suggestions out there. Do get stuck into. Just read it for yourself. Because you can listen to someone like me talking. But some, you know what? As Ian had said, you know, go straight to Jesus. Go straight to his word. And when we look at his word, God speaks to us about himself in his word. When we read it, he speaks to us directly. And he speaks about himself. He also speaks about us in his word, where we're at, where we should be when we read his word. And when we not just read it, we mull it over. You read a bit and then you don't have to rush through it. We can rush through it, but sometimes it's good to think about something, chew on it. Think it over. There was a word for that. You call it meditate. But if I said meditate, you'd think, oh, that was sort of sitting there with your knees crossed and legs crossed. And no, you just chew it over. Think about it. You can say, you can pray, God, show me what you want to tell me in this bit I read. You can sit, walk, drive, thinking about the things you've read. Let his word run through your mind. Just sort of let it rattle around in there. So we can ask God to speak to us through it. And so we've had our reading things. And recently, I was reading. Taking my own bit of advice. I've got to do it myself, haven't I? If I've suggested you read these books. And I'm just going to not rush through it. I want to sort of get through it steadily. I don't want to lose my place, though. Hang on, what was there? And I've been going through it. But, you know, and when you read, you see things fresh. You know, you've read things over many times, but you read it again and you think, oh yeah. Because there's a lot of words in there, aren't there? And I got through to different bits and I kind of look and think about things. But I came to chapter 5 and I just read it and I'd kind of take a bit more out of it. And to introduce the chapter, I thought I did a little bit of research on this one. Galilee. We read a lot about Galilee, don't we? The Sea of Galilee. And so I did a little bit of research on Galilee because I thought, gosh, I've grown up with Galilee, sort of. I mean, going to church. And it's a lake, even though we call it a sea. It's a freshwater lake. And only that's my wrong bit of information. Anyway, from memory, it's about 8 miles wide at the widest point, 13 miles long at the longest point. So quite big, bigger than any lake in England or Wales. Similar in size to Loch Lomond in Scotland. Not as big as the lakes in Northern Ireland. So it's quite decent size. Perhaps from here towards, what would it be, 13 miles somewhere towards the South Downs from here, heading down, 8 miles wide from here to just the other side of Horsham or something, yeah, at the widest point. So decent size, quite long and that. Good. And I thought about it and I thought, you know, I'd love to swim in that. I'd love to go swimming in it. They do some, when I was looking at it, they do some swimming races there. I thought, that'd be great. And today at Lake Galilee, when I looked this up at 11, it was 11 o'clock there. It was 13 degrees. So perhaps a bit warmer than here. I don't know. Well, it's not too bad today, is it? And it should get up to about 17 degrees at its warmest today. Not bad. It was sunny when I looked. Becoming cloudy. And it's going to go drop down to 6 degrees tonight with cloudy and rain. So that's Sea of Galilee today. Yeah? That's my introduction to... Oh, and by the way, do you know it's about 200 metres below sea level? So that would be like, you know the Downs, when you see the Downs, if the sea was at that level, and we were down at the bottom, it'd be something like that. So if somehow there was an earthquake or something, you split it open, that whole area would flood. Be a massive, huge sea it would turn into. And all that would be just wiped out if there was a massive channel came through because it's 200 metres below. It's quite depth, isn't it? Anyway, the Sea of Galilee. Here it's called, and if you look it up, it's the Lake of Gennesaret. Because it had different names, or the Sea of Tiberias. So there we go. A freshwater lake. So I'm going to read a bit and talk a bit about it. One day, as Jesus was standing by the Lake of Gennesaret, with the people crowding around him and listening to the word of God. Listen to the word of God. That was him speaking. He saw at the water's edge. This is a painting I did and I spotted it the other day and I thought, oh, that's just like it. Well, I guess it is. Two boats. Yeah? That's one of my pictures I did and I kind of sits around somewhere. And anyway, I'll come to that in a minute. He saw on the water's edge two boats left there by fishermen who were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, and asked him to put out a little from shore. Then he sat down and taught the people from the boat. And I was thinking about this. So here's Jesus walking along this lakeside. Crowds pushing around him. And imagine this, you can be whoever you want in this story. Think about it. Because this is what you've got to do when you read. Get into it and imagine it. You can just bash through it and go, I've read that. Oh, that's good. Or you can think, wow, look at this. Here he is, he's walking along. You try this, go along to some lake, see some boats and get in it and then start sailing out. See what happens. He sees these two boats. Oh, and there's the fishermen that they belong to just there, sorting their nets out. He gets in it and he says, oh, can you push me out? We just read that and wouldn't think about it. Would we do that? You see these blokes. Oh, can I just use your boat a minute? I want to preach from it. See, this is what's going on here. Jesus says, and these fishermen, and then it goes on to say, so he uses it as a platform. Interestingly, he sat down, and I read somewhere that it said, when they used to talk and preach, they sat down and preached. When they read the word, they stood up. So they actually sat down and preached. And he sat, I don't know, that's what it said. But anyway, he sat in the boat. I'm thinking he sat in the boat because he didn't want to fall out. Yeah? You stand in a rowing boat. So here he is. He sees these boats. He gets in. And the men were there washing their nets. And he got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, and asked him to put out a little from the shore. Then he sat down and taught the people. So he gets in this boat. He says, just let's get out a little bit so that I'm in a floating platform. The people can't be harassing me and I can just talk clearly. It makes good sense. So Simon answered, Master. Oh, no, wait a minute. I jumped a bit. Sorry. When he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, put out into deep water and let down the nets for a catch. So, and then Simon's answer goes, Simon answered, Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything, but because you say so, I will let down the net. So wait a minute. So number one, Jesus walks along. He sees these boats belonging to these fishermen and he says, can I just borrow your boat a minute? Or he just gets in it and says, push me out a little bit or come in with me and just keep it sort of steady for me. I don't know. I was trying to work out whether Peter at that point was in the boat with him or whether he was hanging onto a rope. I don't know. And then when he says, let's go out and catch some fish. Do you know what? So these fishermen, how would they feel? They've actually worked all night. Self-employed businessmen. They've worked all night. And what have they earned? Big fat zero. They're there. They finished working. So they've earned nothing. And they've worked through the night. They've done a night shift. How would you feel? You've done a night shift to be told, sorry, we haven't got any money for you. You're thinking, oh, that's all right, good. I've just worked right through the night and I've got no money. Then this man comes along and says, can I borrow your boat? You're feeling great, aren't you? You've worked all night. This bloke I don't know a great deal about comes along because they're disciples at this point. And then he says, come on, boys, can you take me out? Come on, Simon, let's go out and we'll and let your net down. And then are they thinking... what's going on here? We've fished all night. We're fishermen. We do it for a living. And you're going to take us out. How would we feel? Because that's why I'm putting myself there. I think, how do I feel that I've worked all night? This bloke who's not a fisherman comes and borrows my boat when I'm had a hard night's work. I haven't been paid. I'm tired. I'm just putting my nets away. I've washed my nets. I've sorted my nets out. I've fiddling around with them, sorting any holes in the nets. Just finished tidying up, me and my mates. We're ready to go home and I'll crash out. And Jesus says, come on, let's go out and try once more. How do you feel? Do you want to? Who wants to? No, we don't want to, do we? No one wants to do that. What are we thinking at this point? Oh, give us a break. We want to go home. I haven't got paid. I got no money. I've had enough. But what does Simon do? He says, oh, we've been out all night. But because you say, that's interesting, isn't it? Because he's just met this guy and he's been there. Perhaps he's been sitting in the back of the boat. And he says, Because he's been listening to him preach. He's just heard a message. All those men, fishermen, who were the, shall we say, the uninvited guests, or the ones who hadn't, Jesus had come and found them, hadn't he? Sort of. They weren't the crowd that were following. The crowd that were following were there. And Jesus is speaking to the crowd, but he's speaking to these fishermen at the same time. And these fishermen, well, this Simon, when he's told, Simon answered, Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything. But because you say so, I will let down the nets. When they had done so, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break. So they signaled their partners in the other boat to come out and help, and they came and filled both boats so full that they began to sink. And I thought about this story, and I thought, Jesus came, he sort of, you could say he took a few liberties with them, didn't he? He sort of said, can I use your boat? I mean, we would feel a bit awkward about that. It's some business person there, and you say, can I just borrow that? You might think, I don't know. Then he go, and then he sat in the boat while they were sort of trying to sort their, a lot of people could have said, oh no, I'm not going to bother letting you use my boat. I've got work to do. I've got to sort my nets out. I've finished my shift and I haven't been paid. And Jesus borrows all this. And then he says, let's go out and fish. And they catch a big, they probably did all their night's fishing in one go. Jesus pays them back, doesn't he? They kind of, what they lost because of their, a little bit of obedience, even though they didn't feel like it. Peter didn't feel like it. He did what he was told because it was Jesus. For something in this Jesus, he listened and he thought, this man, I'll do it because you say. Something in there. And he got reimbursed and probably more than what he would have done it for all his nights fishing. So in the end, when they had done so, they caught such so they called a partner. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, go away from me, Lord, I am a sinful man. He suddenly sees this person is something special. It's a bit like the story that what Irma read, what Pauline read about, you know, he recognizes Jesus and worships him. And suddenly Peter sees this holy man, something special. He's controlling nature here. He's got all the fish to come. Go away from me, I'm a sinner. He suddenly feels, in a way, what God would do if we came into contact with him as in our sin. We would suddenly feel hopeless. He fell at his knees and said, go away from me, Lord, I am a sinful man. For he and all his companions were astonished at the catch of fish they had taken. And so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partners. Then Jesus said to Simon, don't be afraid. From now on, you will catch men. So they pulled their boats up on the shore, left everything and followed him. I left them, leave it behind. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. They just leave it all. They just leave my business. I'm off and follow this. Well, they've encountered someone who is miraculous. And I thought at that point, I thought, did they think now that this Jesus is going to give them an easy ride and supply their meals for them? I don't know, because I was trying to look at both sides of it, because I'm thinking, oh, that's an amazing act of faith. Or did they think, this is the cushy option? I don't know at that point what they thought, because they just dropped everything and followed him. And so when you read these stories, you know, you can look at them and you can just, I could have read, and I probably would have normally just read through that story. Know it, I've read it before. It's gone. And I read it and I just thought, there's a lot in there, isn't there, that you look at their attitudes and how they were obedient. That man who had the mud put on his eyes, he was told to go and wash at that lake. He could have gone and just gone like this around the corner. Oh, dirty face. Just got my face all dirty. But he went and washed it in that where he was told to go and wash it. And his eyes were restored to him. But he had to take that walk. I'd like to know how far he had to walk, blind, to wash his eyes. A little simple act. He could have just gone, can't see, no good. But he had to take that act of walking and doing it. And these men, they didn't want to let go out fishing again. They finished. And another little... So then I'm going through and I've come along to another story where the disciples are told by Jesus to go and get the donkey. And I thought, it's a funny little story again. Funny little story. Because we read that again, you know, Jesus is going to go to Jerusalem. And he says to the disciples, go to so-and-so, and there you'll find this little donkey. And if anyone asks you, say the master needs it. How many would like to go and get that donkey? Go over there, there's a scooter up there, it's got the keys left in it. Could you just get it for me, because I'm just going to go for a ride on that. And if anyone asks you, say that someone needs it. You think, yes, good, I'm going to, you'd be quite reluctant, wouldn't we? I don't know enough about this story, because I don't know enough about things like donkeys, because it said the donkey had never been ridden. I don't know why that's in there. That's in there for a reason. Is it because there was something special? Or was it that they wasn't trained to walk, and it would be like, like in the Westerns, they had to sort of break in an animal, and it was like, I don't know. I don't know enough about donkeys, so... But it's mentioned, and I thought, is this donkey just not trained and Jesus has got to get on this untrained donkey and ride it? Or is it special because no one's ridden it and it's special for Jesus? And that was special because, in a way, that was what kings rode donkeys in Israel. It wasn't really sort of like the Romans riding a big horse. It was like, here comes the king on his donkey. That's what they didn't have like big... I think that's what it was a bit like. And I don't know, but I just read the story and I thought, there they were. They were asked to go. Now what, when I looked at it, I thought, well, I guess they could say, well, it was not my fault. Jesus asked me to get it. You know, someone comes out and asks them, well, why are you taking my donkey? He told me to get it. Because in a sense, he says, if someone asks you, say the master needs it. And that's what did happen. And they said, oh, master needs it. And they take it. I'd love to know the background of that story. What happened with that donkey? What happened with the person? Who were they? Because that story's in there, isn't it? And did they? But it was just a little thing that those disciples were asked. And I think about the owners. Did they know Jesus? And they think, this is Jesus. I let him use my donkey. I don't know. But sometimes we're asked little things from Jesus, aren't we? Go and wash your eyes. Go and get that donkey for me. Or could you lend your donkey to the master? Look at it, if you own the donkey. And then moving on to my last story, John. And this is, just let me find it. Another story that we know well, that we go through all the time. On the third day, John 2, and starting from the beginning. On the third day, a wedding took place in Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, they have no more wine. He's like, why are you asking me? Jesus, they've run out of wine. Yeah? And in a sense, he says, what's that to do with me? What does he say? dear woman, why do you involve me? Interesting, isn't it? Why does he say that? Jesus replied, my time has not yet come. His mother, she kind of ignores it. I don't know what she does. She's like, I find this really interesting because he says that and she goes, his mother said to the servants, do whatever he tells you. She just sort of doesn't bother with him, And Jesus says this thing and she says, just do what he says. Now, interesting, because I don't think Jesus had done any miracles up to here. But what it struck me that Mary knew Jesus, the birth. She it says that she stored these up in her heart. Mary, that's his mum, she knew that there was something special about Jesus. She had spent the last 30 years with this, and longer, baby, her son. The birth was spectacular. Before the birth was amazing. Everything about him. And she knew that there was something. She had it all the way through. She'd been watching him and thinking, there's something special about this boy. Special. And so she says, just do what he says. Now then, I was looking at this and I'm thinking, do what he says. Do whatever he tells you. Nearby stood 6 stone water jars. Now I looked at this and I thought, what were these? These are about, I'm guessing, they're about the size of a bath in your house. Yeah? About the size of, you read these stories and you just go right through it. About the size of a bath. 6 stone water jars. I don't think they could really carry them around, because if you had a stone bath, that would be quite hard to shift, wouldn't it? So they were big containers. So I brought this container along. Camping. You know, we love our camping. Get your water container. I'm guessing this is about 5 gallons, is it? 5 gallons. And that, I fill that up and that's heavy, isn't it? Yeah. When you go camping, we usually use little containers to fill our water up. That's probably, I'm thinking that's 5. I don't know. 5 gallons. Yeah, water. If I said to you, go and fill that up, where would you go? Here? Tap? Perhaps try and get in there and get a tap. I don't know if it'd work in here. You'd have to get a sort of, when we're camping, we can undo that and you have a sort of special tap for it. What did they do in their times to fill up? Now, so it goes like this. That's what it's nice to think about these things, because it's harder than it seems, really. I've lost my place. Yeah. Stone water jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremony washing. Each holding from 20 to 30 gallons. It's a lot of water, isn't it? He says, go and fill them up, 6 of them. So I was trying to work this out. And so they run out of wine. Oh, I bought a bottle with me. How many bottles is that? How many bottles? Anyone? I'm thinking at least 600 bottles of, they got to fill up. And I was trying to play it conservatively. So these servants are told to go and get 600 bottles of water, maybe a whole load of these, or 6 bathfuls of water. Where from? Where did they do it in Israel? They didn't switch a tap on, I don't think. What they could have had is, these are the 3 options I'm thinking. If they were sophisticated enough, they might have had a water course that ran to it, so they could undo a water course, because some places have that kind of thing. So that wouldn't have been too hard, would it? That would be like switching a tap on. Or they had to go to a well in the middle of the village. Let's say it's 100 metres away, and carry an awful lot of buckets of water to fill it up. But it's just we just read it as a simple task. And what do you think that the servants thought when they were asked to go and fill a whole load of, 100 bucketfuls of water, whatever it was they needed?
Well, it's not my contract. I'm here to serve wine. I'm here to go and fill up 600 bottles of water. What if I get the water and it's only water? What an idiot am I going to look like?
Is that what they were like, or did they? See, what do they do when you're asked to do something like that? And they went and filled up. Now, I suppose they could say, well, he told me to. He told me to get it. Because in a way, you're kind of doing a stupid thing, aren't you? You're going to turn up to the wine man with bottles of water and say, here, serve this. Which is better than nothing, I suppose. But they would have been not too impressed. It would have been absolute shamer on the whole people who were running the party. And sometimes, we're asked to do things And it could seem silly, but some things are very sort of simple basic things. Like that filling up the water could have been a simple request. Putting out the boat was a simple request. Some things are a bit strange and unusual. Getting the donkey, it's not too bad a request, is it? Could be a bit awkward. Owner comes out, what are you doing with my donkey? Oh, well, he asked me to get it. And what would we do? What would we do in these situations? And with the wine, I just thought, you know, they had to fill the water up. It's not that big a, it's a bit of a funny request. It's a lot of work. Go and carry, I don't know, if you had to carry 10 buckets of water from the other end of the building back up here to fill up some thing that we had here. Say we had a big, we're going to do a baptism, we had a pad, big, one of those sort of swimming pools here, and then we said, we've got to get water from over at Connie's to bring to here in buckets. How many of us would be like, oh yeah, that sounds great. We do. But we could run a hose in, couldn't we? We'd think of something like that. But in a sense, that's what Jesus, he just asked them to do. Some things were a bit, they weren't, sometimes they were a bit different, but some things were normal. And we can either do it or we don't. And finally, just quickly, last week we had Gideon. And in the end, do you know what? The first thing he had to do, what God called him to do, was to go down against his family. Had an idol, a pole, wooden pole, that they would have worshipped, danced around, which was the reason that the country was in the mess, because of idolatry. And the first thing he has to do is make a stand against his own family, go and chop your family's idol down. Not only that, you have to sacrifice your own family's cow. You've got to burn your own family's tractor on the farm. I'll put it like that. Because that's the cost it is. And he does it. But it wouldn't have to make him awkward in his own community. He had to stand against his own family. And he did it. And sometimes when God gets us to do something that could be small to start with. And some of the things I was just thinking, when God calls us, when we follow Jesus, he may ask us to do things. And there are many, we've done one this morning, shared the bread and wine round. That's something he asked us to do. It's in the Bible. It says, do this in remembrance of me. We've done it. He may ask us to live a certain way, a certain life, not the life of all those around you. You know, Gideon had to go and chop the idol down because that was the cause of the nations coming under attack from abroad. Idolatry. Sometimes you have to do things different to what you've always done. And he had to do that. Live life a certain way. Sometimes we don't just do what everyone else does because they all do it. We have to do something a bit different. And sometimes we are asked to make a stand. You know, when something's wrong, you have to stand against something that's wrong. And if we hang around with Jesus, I'm just taking into the picture, and expect him to say nothing, because Jesus isn't going to say nothing to us. Jesus was always saying things to those around him. Hanging around with Jesus will make demands on us. Our lives must change. Our decisions must change. Our priorities must change. Because we're not now just living for ourselves. Some things he has asked us already, they're in the Bible. We're told to love one another. We're told to share this together. So he does ask us to do things. Sometimes we have to go out and do something a bit different, make a stand. And sometimes it's just to live a life worthy of him. I think I've run over my time. But when you read through your word, and you read the Bible, look at the stories and have a little think about them, because there's more in there than meets the eye. You know, and you can do a little bit of, and it's amazing now, we have the internet, you can Google everything and have a little read on how deep the sea is and all that. But Jesus does call us and ask us to do some things. And we can either ignore him or we can obey him. I think I'll close on that. Thank you, Jesus, for your word. I thank you that you are gentle, but you do call us. You say that your burden is easy, and you also say, take up your cross, follow me, depending on this, where we're at, Lord. And I just pray that you would help us to be aware of your word, help us to follow you and live for you and with you. In Jesus' name, amen.